Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it is 5 o'clock Pacific time on Wednesday afternoon, and of course that would make it a perfect time for a cup of Joe. This is a podcast radio show that is worldwide, and we have an audience that reaches out all over the globe, and it's exciting for me to be able to share the news, the stories, the woes sometimes, the struggles, and the joys of a little group that we call the Human Solution. My name is Joe Grumbine, and I am currently the host of this show as well as the CEO of the Human Solution International. We are a 501c3 nonprofit civil rights group, and we are dedicated to the premise that no one belongs in jail for a plant, and we are on a mission to end cannabis prohibition, and that's where we are today, as hopefully history will unfold and cannabis will be once again allowed to be the plant that it always has been, without fear of imprisonment or loss of jobs, family members, or all the other wonderful things that the powers that be have sometimes deemed it important to take. We'll probably move on to other civil rights issues, but right now, this is our primary focus. This is going to be an abbreviated show. I had a few guests that were scheduled to come on this afternoon that were unable to make it, and it looks like I have Mary Donnelly on the line, and hopefully your screening calls are going to be able to screen calls. I have a board of calls on the line right now that some are screened, some are not. Anyhow, so we're going to go wild card. If Mary's able to screen, that's fantastic. We'll be able to operate normally. Today, we're gonna go a little bit dark today. We're going to dig into some truths, into some of the stark realities that we deal with. A lot of times that we talk about, you know, the inspirational stories and the stories of hope and the stories of victories, and of course that's important. Everything's important, though. We live in a world of cause and effect, of yin and yang. For every bit of lightness, there's a bit of darkness, and it's important, I think, to recognize all aspects of the reality that we live in. Now, I do believe we create our own reality, and as a rule, I don't discuss negative things, and I certainly don't talk negative about people. And I think that that's an important rule to follow. As CEO of this organization, I believe it's important to lead by example. And we live in a world that's so easily wrapped up in gossip and negativity, and, you know, especially Facebook and the social networking. It's so easy to get the sharks all riled up and start spitting venom at each other. But I think it's also important to know where we come from, and to know where here is. You know, a lot of people have misconceptions about the organization. A lot of people believe, both good and bad. Some people think that it's bigger and more capable than maybe it is, and some people believe that it's got all kinds of problems that it doesn't have. I think it's important one of the values of this show in particular is to show the truth about things and to show the reality about things. And as the Human Solution grows, I think it's important that everybody that's a part of it understand what it is they're a part of. Now, last show, I began to tell the story of where we came from. And we talked about my trial and rallying the support and creating the organization. And I don't remember if I got to the part that out of many groups came this group. And it was interesting because before we were the Human Solution, we called ourselves the Cannabis Coalition, the California Cannabis Coalition. And it was literally members of a number of local Southern California groups that had come together to do that initial fundraiser that we did that ultimately funded the corporation soon to be known as the Human Solution. We went along in that way, and we actually went out of our way to do things very correctly, and we created a board, and we had a president and a vice president, secretary, treasurer, all the things that a board needs. We held elections, and, you know, what I discovered quickly is as an all-volunteer organization, a lot of people will come to an organization such as ours with intentions different than just to altruistically come together to end prohibition. Oftentimes there's other agendas at play, you know, personal businesses to pitch or networking to be had or some other, you know, political agenda. There's all sorts of things that can happen. And some people just have straight-up power trips. They want to be in charge of things. They want to be able to tell people what to do. That doesn't work very well in an all-volunteer organization, as we find out, though, because everybody's time is valuable. And when you say, I'm willing to donate my time, and we all get an equal amount of that every single day. We all wake up with the same amount of resources at our fingertips, personal resources, not financial or other types of resources. And so my 24 hours that I get when I wake up is the same as yours. And what I choose to do with it is equally as valuable as what you choose to do with it. And so if I choose to dedicate my time to organizing people, to teaching people, to focusing efforts on educating about a particular topic because I find that important and I find other people to do the same, it puts us all on an equal footing. So when you end up having positions, more often than not, those are necessary positions to accomplish a particular thing in a particular way. And those roles end up being roles of responsibility rather than roles of privilege or roles of stature, roles of figurehead type roles. But a lot of times people will come in and say, oh, I want to be on the board because whatever, I get to be the boss of things or whatever. And then they come to realize that it's just a bunch of boring meetings that we all have to sit down, discuss, and actually make decisions that have the best interest of the organization in mind, and our own personal agenda has very little to do with any of it. Well, the same holds true with all the positions. And ultimately, you know, when you have a treasurer, it doesn't mean you get to have all the money. It means you have to manage the money that's been donated. It means that you have to be accountable for everything that comes in and where it goes, and to be able to keep records straight and to be able to file the proper forms when necessary and all of that. The role of the president or CEO is really a huge role of responsibility. Anything that goes wrong in the organization ultimately lands on the president and the CEO's shoulders, whether anybody realizes that or not. Anything that's ever gone wrong in the past 6 years with this organization, it's all landed in my lap, and I've been held accountable for everything, even things that didn't necessarily belong there. So that's the nature of the beast. The vice president is tasked with, you know, a certain amount of responsibilities, and the secretary has very specific jobs to do. And so as we're dealing with our upcoming elections, it's going to be very important that people understand what these jobs that are up for office are. And my goal, our goal as an organization, is to make sure that everybody is included in the process. Remember, every active member gets to cast a vote, and anybody who is qualified has the ability to run for office. What I'm going to be doing in the next several weeks and all the way up until the election is use this platform, a Cup of Joe radio show, as a platform to give potential candidates an opportunity to speak to the group, to potential voters. And I think it's going to be most important that we have people willing to get out there and start talking about, you know, what they could bring to this organization. It's funny, as an all-volunteer organization, there is no financial gain to be had. So what is gained in this organization, it's an interesting little secret, and people figure it out as they're moving along as a volunteer, that when you give something, volunteer time, you get blessed in incredible ways. And it's funny, I've put ads out in Craigslist or whatnot over the years looking for volunteers and for particular projects or positions. And what I've always put in this is the pay is unlimited and tangible rewards. And it's funny because people laugh about that because, yeah, you're getting everything but money. But the truth is, that's nothing could be more true. The rewards that you get from putting yourself out there and helping people that you don't know, would never possibly know unless it was, you know, this common thread that we share, it's incredible. The shared experience of standing up to help somebody in need in their time of trouble, to be able to share victories or sometimes even dealing with defeats, but being there with somebody when they get hit. I could never share accurately the blessings that have come from that. So that's ultimately what is to be gained. This is the super secret, this is the secret of all of this. But the reality is, these roles are very responsible roles. They're important roles. And we're going to talk a little bit about where it comes from and why it's so important that whether the Human Solution becomes huge and has tens of thousands or millions of members, or it gets smaller than it is and it has hundreds or a few thousand members, what's important is that we know who we are, we know what we're here to do, and we know how to do it. And when somebody comes to our organization with the appropriate and necessary ingredients, that we know how to do what we do. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about that as we're going along. This show is oftentimes full of stories of who we are and what we do, stories of bringing the grassroots together, stories of victory, stories of support and education, the things that we do. So it is important, I believe, that in order to have a successful election, as we're going to, that we have people engaged, number one, that they understand what the roles are, and, you know, that they bring their heart and soul to it. And it would be much better if we have a small board and, you know, the ability to operate freely, no, with the tools that we have, rather than just having some giant conglomeration. It looks like I'm running without a screener today. I've got a whole ton of calls. I don't have the ability to go giving out username passwords while I'm on the air right now. So we're gonna go freestyle a little bit. Before we get into this, though, I do have a couple of things that I want to share. So when I left off last week, I believe I had come up to my trial, and anybody who's known me for any length of time knows the outcome of that. At the end of the day, I am a free man today because of the support that I was able to rally together, that the human solution was able to come together, come to light and become. We were born out of my trial and the subsequent trials that followed, and we learned how important it was to be present and to participate and to be, the value of support. And if it wasn't for all those people watching the kangaroo court that convicted me and the willingness to step up there and testify as to the problems that there were, I would be serving a prison term right now. Now, for everybody that thinks that somehow there's justice, there's fairness, that things work in a particular way or not, you've likely not ever been in the justice system or the legal system, as the attorneys call it. Sometimes it works just great. Sometimes the right thing happens, and other times very much the wrong thing happens. As we go through life and as we get closer to the end of prohibition, many people, especially people that are in the industry, they have this false sense of accomplishment that we've already done it. There's already a law in place, that there's already protections, that all these businesses are happening, all these hemp fests and hemp cons and industry shows are happening. People are actively, openly participating in commerce with this plant, that clearly it's okay. And people have this uninformed, ignorant impression that if somebody gets in trouble, that they must have been doing something wrong. And nothing could be farther from the truth. I don't know if you've all been paying attention as the elections are coming along, the primaries are getting close to being finished. But at the same time, there's things happening in our courts. And there was a judge that was sanctioned by the Judicial Review Board for having inappropriate sex with interns and students in his chambers, in his robe, and was sanctioned. But he got reelected. If that's fair and just, I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe that's the kind of people we want as judges. This judge also tried to use his influence to get somebody else into a position that they didn't necessarily deserve. Doesn't matter. He's sitting on the bench for another term. There was a kid who was convicted of rape, and he raped a girl who was passed out behind a dumpster, and he was given a summer in jail. And at the same time, Lance Glore, up in Washington State where it's legal, was just given 10-year sentence. It doesn't make sense. I know of more and more people that have been given prison terms for pot and nothing else. You know, no violence, no victims, no weapons, no other drugs, not that even any of those factors would necessarily make a difference, but they weren't there. Those factors weren't there. And I think that if we understood that that was the case, maybe we'd get a little more connected. Maybe we would realize that this volunteer time is important, is hugely important. And ultimately, maybe we would step up and end this once and for all. At the same time, we just had an inmate that was sentenced to 55 years, pardoned. He got free. And I don't know that it was a pardon, but he got out because of a judicial order. And, we've had over the last couple of years a number of our lifers freed, but we've also had more people get brought into prison for life. So, it doesn't necessarily make sense. But what it does to me is it clarifies the need, the importance of ending prohibition once and for all, because that is the core, the source of the problem. The problem is prohibition. The problem is making a criminal act out of a plant, a plant that never did anything wrong, a plant that was put here by our Creator, a plant that grows whether we are here or not. And yet somehow we've taken that plant and allowed it to be the source of our crimes. And that is not justice. And that is based in lies, deceit, and layers of corruption. And so, you know, it's just that important. So when I say, you know, I'm really hoping that we get more people engaged and involved, I really want that to happen. I really need to get a team together that's willing to dig in. So I want to fast forward a little bit. You know, we had this corporation, The Human Solution, and, you know, we were doing good out of Southern California. We started to create a couple of chapters. But the problem was, as it always has been with these volunteer organizations, people will agree to do things that they won't do. They'll raise their hand but not show up. You know, they'll say, I'll do this job, but they won't. And at the end of the day, a handful of people end up doing everything. And, you know, if you've ever worked in any kind of a church group or any kind of any volunteer organization, there's very few exceptions to this, unless there's some compensation outside of, you know, unlimited intangible benefits, most people won't show up. Some will, and they're the amazing angels that keep this organization true to its mission and keep it what it is. But frankly, you know, it's just a lot of hard work, and to have to show up day after day, week after week, requires some exceptional character that is very hard to find. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for those exceptional characters willing to show up day after day, week after week. The reality is these positions are not particularly time straining. They don't require necessarily a lot of time. The president, vice president, the executive directors, we meet twice a week, every week. And oftentimes there's a lot of things that we do that require daily work. You know, the president, CEO, frankly, has to do every job that nobody else will do. So I often wear the hat of the National Court Support Coordinator. I often wear the hat of the National Prison Outreach Coordinator. I often wear lots of different hats. You know, thank God for Becca Nichols and Mike Harris, who have really carried a lot of weight lately, and Lisa Wooldridge, who's recently stepped up heavily. But frankly, there haven't been a lot of national support. People go off and they get busy doing other things, and it's a difficult thing to hold together, but when you realize how important it is, you make it work. And people rise up out of the ether for a minute, a week, a month, and sometimes they stick around. You never know which one is going to be that magic one, so you always reel them in. You always give them your attention. You always listen, and you always hope. You always hope that maybe this one will stick around for a little bit longer. So here's what ends up happening. We created, finally, about a year ago, two years ago, almost to this day, we finalized our 501c3. It was very, very soon. It was between June and July that we actually filed it and got approved. 501c3, that is the thing that separates us from most of the other organizations. If you look at most of the other organizations out there, you will find out that they're just a network, a grassroots group, which is fine. It's not to diminish anybody's anything. There's a lot of 501c4s out there, which is really easy to get, and really all you are is a lobby group. You get to be political, and that's important in its own right. But to be a 501c3 is a special and very unique and very demanding type of organization. We're held to a higher standard, and we're also able to give a tax write-off. We're also able to do things that a 501c4 cannot do, and that a grassroots organization or a network or whatever, a Facebook group for that matter, cannot do. One of the things that we can do is we can sign off on community service hours that are issued by a judge. And I've personally written notes, letters of completion of volunteer service for dozens of people that picked up a pot charge, went through, either got convicted or most of the time took a plea deal. You know, remember, 95 or more percent of all cases are settled in plea deals. That doesn't make it good, bad, or sideways. It just means that's the way it is. That is the other side of the true victory of winning and being acquitted, is a plea deal. Sometimes these plea deals are golden and they end up being a complete victory. Other times, they make felons out of good people. Other times, they set good people up in a position to be violated and ultimately do prison time when they wouldn't have otherwise. So that is, you know, what's at stake. But a lot of times, part of a sentence includes community service hours. And that community service hours is something that can be satisfied by most 501c3 organizations. And most courts don't even care. They don't even check. As a 501c3, I can write a letter on our letterhead after, you know, the defendant or the person has completed their hours of service and get them signed off. And with all but just a few cases, we've been 100% successful. There's been one or two cases where there was a personal issue and the defendant had upset the court in such a way that they went and investigated us and determined that we were a pot group and they were not going to allow a pot group to sign off on community service hours. But even after I spoke with the people and explained to them and showed them that we're a civil rights organization, they still says, no, you're a pot group. No, we're not going to do it. Okay, but that was, I think, two out of probably 30 or more instances where we have signed off successfully. So imagine this, okay? And if you knew that this was a possibility and you picked up a case or you knew somebody who did and you were able to get community service hours as part of your settlement and you were able to come and work for an organization like the Human Solution and actually support and help other people that are fighting their own cases and sit in court and hopefully help somebody who would have possibly been convicted to not be convicted. Well, I think that would be a good use of the court's time and your time. It's happened more than once. There's been a few chapters that have actually been started as a result of community service hours. So that's one of the things that sets us apart from the others. Another thing is, and frankly, it always comes down to money, but we can offer a tax write-off. We can literally, for a donation, we had a vehicle donated to us at one point in Arizona for the court support team. We've had the nojailforpot.com website donated to us. We've had a number of items, computers donated to us. We've had money donated to us, and each and every one of those things that are donated to us, Lisa, you have to put yourself on the screen bucket too. Both buckets need to be in the yellow, otherwise it won't work. You can't just put the one person on. You have to put yourself in too. Sorry, we're doing a screening lesson right here live on the air. If you ever want to get involved in this radio show, please contact me at 951-436-6312. I need producers, I need screeners, I need people to schedule guests, I need people to be guests on the show, and that will make this a better show. And when somebody can't make it, it leaves us not hanging. We've had a number of people trained to be screeners, but only a handful have ever actually done it more than once. So it's a good thing. Let's see, where did I leave off? That's what the problem that happens when I get a lot of text messages and calls. Basically, I get sidetracked, and it makes it really hard for me to do the show. Let's just go ahead and get to some guests here. I'm going to just go ahead and tear through the guests and we'll see what happens here. We have a first call. We have a 530-677 is the first three. I don't know who you are. Oh, here's Craig Cecil. You just saved me by the bell.
You have a prepaid call. You will not be charged for this call. This call is being recorded and is subject to monitoring. Hang up to decline the call.
Hello, Craig. How are you doing today?
Hello, Joe. Well, I'm well as can be expected.
What's the latest out of Terre Haute, Indiana?
Well, Terre Haute has been sort of quiet lately, but as you know, the inmates got a bunch of news last week Friday from President Obama, so the mood is at least upbeat around here.
Okay.
The president continues to commute the sentences of more and more federal prisoners, so that's kind of brought up the cheer around here.
Yeah, I heard Weldon Angelos got released. I don't know that he got commuted, but he at least got released.
Well, what happened to him is that really the prosecutor was, given a conscience, I guess. It's, what they did is they charged him with three of the exact same gun charges, saying that a person went to his house three times and got a little bit of marijuana from him. So they said that since this person went to his house three times and he had a gun at his house all three times, that constituted three gun charges.
Well, that sounds like something the federal government would do.
Well, they do, and unfortunately, the way they work is the first gun charge carries 5 years or a 5-year mandatory minimum. If there's any additional ones, as they were with him, there was three of them, any additional one carries a minimum of 25 years. So just for the guns, he received a 55-year sentence.
Right, right. I remember when Chris Williams was being sentenced, that was one of the big things that they had him. He was going to be facing over 99 years because of the gun charges.
And, I mean, in Weldon's case, I mean, never did he threaten anybody with a gun, commit a crime that involved a gun. He was in his own home with a duly registered weapon. I mean, there should have been nothing criminal at all about him, owning a gun in his own home.
Yeah, well, that's, again, we were talking earlier today about things that make sense. And our judicial system is not one of them. You know, there's a kid that just was convicted of raping a girl, and it was a brutal rape, and she was passed out when it happened. And this kid just got a 6-month jail sentence. 6 months.
Yes.
And
it's been in the national news.
Yeah. It's absolutely unheard of. And they're trying to recall the judge, but they've gotten over 300,000 signatures on a change.org petition, but they don't have anywhere near the signatures that they would require locally to get a recall. And this judge is going to end up sitting on that bench, and this kid's going to get off, and because he didn't ever do anything wrong before, and the thing that's funny about that is many times in pot cases, especially in federal court, these are crimes that have no victim, not a brutal rape, not an event that's going to destroy and damage a human being's life for the rest of their life, but a victimless crime. And many times that these people will show up and have dozens and dozens of testimonies about the good works that this person's done, and no victim and no victim's family will ever testify. And those people will be given a 10-year mandatory minimum sentence. And meanwhile, this kid, who has the most heinous crime, a victim that will be just damaged forever, and 6 months in jail, and he's a free man.
And, I mean, how do you square that? There was another case in the news today. A judge in Texas gave a sentence to a man on a DUI charge. Now, granted, it was his ninth DUI charge, but the judge gave him a life sentence.
Yeah, I heard about that. I'm a little bit more torn on that because I don't know if there were victims in that. But a life sentence anyways, any way you look at it, I mean, you know, give him a drug that makes him allergic to alcohol or something. But, geez, a life sentence is supposed to be reserved for the most heinous crimes that have, obviously, must have a victim no matter what.
In my pre-sentence report, from a person that, you know, was, you know, charged with prosecuting me and, you know, making me look as evil as possible, there's a section on there that asks about victims, and it very clearly stated that there was no victims whatsoever.
Right.
So, I mean, they know the folly of their ways.
Exactly. And that's, you know, again, as we're talking, well, we're talking about, you know, what's right and reasonable and fair and, you know, what to be expected. And, you know, I was talking about the human solution, and I was talking about, you know, what we do and how we do it. And, you know, I was talking about the importance of the type of organization. You know, we're a 501c3 organization that makes it very unique and very special. And it's not something that when we have a position that's open, it's not for everybody, and it's not a prestige position, but it's actually a very important, almost a sacred position. It's something that's entrusted to somebody to do a job that's going to affect other people's lives. And, you know, it's important to realize that when you get out there and you're fighting on this front line, that you're not fighting a fair fight, that you're not fighting, you're not fighting a battle that has clear boundaries or clear rules of engagement or consequences. You just never know what's going to happen.
Oh, yes. And more and more now, with the availability of marijuana to more people, you know, in the states where it's been decriminalized and in the 23 states where medical marijuana is available, there's more and more stories of people having all kinds of different conditions that are either cured or alleviated through marijuana. And, I mean, they can't fight that. There's been so many different children that through the different cannabinoid derivatives have taken them from many seizures a day to one or two seizures a year. It's just actually giving these children some real quality of life that they didn't otherwise have.
Well, I'm neither going to confirm nor deny this, but rumor would have it that I have some intimate knowledge of some of these people, and I can tell you, you know, allegedly, it's amazing when you see what this plan is capable of doing, and when you see the real change that affects people in a real time, and the quality of life and the miracles. I mean, straight up miracles. I have story after story of people that were sentenced to death by their doctors, and they were able to take this medicine, and they walked today free of cancer and free of ailments in many cases for no other treatment other than this plant.
That's true.
So,
and there's so many doctors. I mean, of course, there's probably still some doctors that are opposed to marijuana for whatever reason. But
well, you know what? It's a lot of fear. There's actually still a lot of doctors that are afraid. You know, they work real hard and they spend a lot of money to get their medical license, and the federal government can still take that away if you are found to be doing the wrong thing, and cannabis is still Schedule 1, and you're still not allowed to even research it, you know, without some kind of a special authority. And, you know, so these doctors are really putting their livelihoods, their whole life's work at risk anytime that they stand up for this plant. We have Dr. Molly Fry come aboard on the show a couple of weeks ago, and she lost her license over this. She also did 5 years in prison over it in the federal prison system. And yet she still stands tall, and she still is ready to, speak on behalf of the planet and educate people and do everything that she can.
And yet we hear about a national epidemic of people who are... Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. There's an epidemic of people that are prescribed the oxycodone and those kind of medications that actually do end up turning into heroin addicts and all that, trying to look for a less expensive alternative. And that's allowed to continue, whereas marijuana, which may actually benefit some of those people, the poor doctor's not even allowed to prescribe it.
I couldn't agree more. It's a crazy world. And, you know, if you start looking at real studies, and it's not just straight overdoses that kill people, but I know many, many, many stories where somebody will get a heart attack or a stroke or an aneurysm, or they'll pass out and get in a car accident as a direct an interaction with pharmaceutical drugs. And yet, it won't be an overdose. It won't be considered, a death by a straight overdose. So the numbers are completely skewed. It's not, there's not any kind of real stats that can tell you what's really happening.
But like you say, the view of marijuana and just the punishment of marijuana compared to, especially as it compares to a violent offense, such as that rape in California, like I've explained, my sentencing guidelines, given that I'm in the no prior conviction, category of guidelines, had I been convicted of rape rather than a marijuana charge, my guideline range would have been 31 to 44 months in prison for a violent rape. But yet my guidelines for marijuana was life. And not because I even sold marijuana, only because I helped somebody else service their trucks that they used to haul marijuana. So I was really like twice removed from marijuana.
No, I couldn't agree more. And it's just a crazy... It's a crazy, crazy world, and, the bottom line is we have an election cycle coming up right now. And in this election cycle, there's been a little bit of talk about, the drug war, and a little bit of talk about, rescheduling, descheduling, and all of this. But the reality is, as much of a real issue it is, there's very, very little discussion about this. There's been very little discussion about the criminal, the judicial system, very little discussion about anything that has to do with ending prohibition. And unfortunately, I can't even imagine how it's not at least brought up in some of the major mainstream debates.
Now, the only thing that I've heard out of the three major presidential candidates is there's talk about the disparate effect on black people of the criminal prosecutions, but none of it just a straight-out look to say, does our punishment fit the crime? I mean, nobody's going down that line to say that, maybe there's something wrong with the laws. Not that there's not a problem with the color of the people that are violating the laws. There's a problem with the laws themselves.
Well, and I think that that's one of the things that, it's a door-opening situation, but we need to really just rip this thing open and start looking at the travesty that is our prison system. There's nothing about it that makes sense, and there's nothing about it that there's nothing about it that it does. And I just, we need to break it open and revisit the whole system and our sentencing guidelines and start putting some constitution to work.
Well, hopefully, the Libertarian candidate, I believe Mr. Johnson, is the only one that's made a stand for the legalization of marijuana. Hopefully, he'll get invited to the debates here, you know, over the summer, and he might be able to at least, you know, get the decriminalization issue in the debates and in the political arena where there might be the beginning of change.
Oh, I sure hope so.
Thanks,
Joe. Well, there he goes. He got cut off. Once again, Craig Cecil calling from Terre Haute, Indiana, serving a life sentence for pot. We got about 15 minutes left. I'm going to do a lightning round, and all I'm going to do is, I don't know what's going on with screening, but please don't text me anymore, whoever you are. It just makes things difficult. Please do not text. All right, I'm just going to go ahead and go lightning on this, and I'm going to basically say the area code and the first three numbers, and then I'm going to pick you up, and you're going to be live on the air. We're going to start out with 405, and the first three numbers of your number are 446. You are live on the air. Who am I talking to?
This is Albert Thomas in Oklahoma.
Oh, there you are, Albert. Lisa's trying real hard to get this screening done, but it's not working. So anyhow, we got a couple of minutes to let us know what's going on. I understand you've had some big changes going on out there. What's shaking in Oklahoma?
Well, you know, I ended up in court, and I took the plea at my attorney begged me. He really said, I was in a real bad fix here. And so it's a 7-year sentence with a deferred entry and judgment. I have 364 days of DA-supervised probation, and I have to go for an assessment where they will tell me what I need to do as a penance, I guess, in the way of some sort of maybe AA meetings or things like that. I'm not sure exactly what, but at the end of the assessment, they will then tell me what I have to do in order to satisfy the DA here for the probation. And,
wow.
Yeah.
That seems pretty heavy. What happened to them telling you to get the hell out of town and they were going to leave you alone?
Well, they you know, that actually was part of the deal, and that's why it was only 364 days. But after it was all said and done, I don't have to leave. I just have to report where I'm at. If I decide to stay here, though, I have to abide by the laws here. And let's say if I wanted to continue to use this plant the way that it's been beneficial for me, then I need to go somewhere where I can grow it and I can juice it and I can eat it, because that's where I found the most value. And so I was content with, you know, the verdict, because I realized that that's truly what I'm trying to promote, or what I was doing here, and what, you know, essentially I was told on by, you know, it was my inner circle that turned me in. That's why I would not have been successful at trying to continue to say I'm not guilty. It was going to be impossible, and so those people doubled down on me, and so I really thought they were going to maybe just, you know, not continue to press the issue, but it ends up that,
well,
they showed,
I mean,
up,
you know, it's a tough thing. You were in the middle of it. You made the choice that you felt best for you, and I stand by you, and I hope that you know, you will continue to support our work, and that you know, you recognize the true importance of ending prohibition once and for all. Because though you may have been technically guilty, it's a bad law, and so our right to nullify those bad laws, not only as a juror but as a citizen, would tell us that we follow a law that's a just law, a higher law, that says if there's a bad law, it's not necessarily wrong to break it. And, you know, then you got to hold yourself to your own moral code. Whatever that tells you, you follow it, you know, and I respect your decision And I'd like to have a discussion with you in private, you know, more about this. We're running low on time, and I do want to get to all the other callers, but, you know, just know that no matter what your choice is and was, we stand by you, and I just want to see a world where this is no longer an issue, where people do not have to worry about having to make what a difficult decision you had to make. And you know what? I stand by your side as I always have, and this organization stands with you.
Well, I want to thank you guys too, because it was your support and guidance that actually got me to the point where I was able to have the verdict, or you know, to at least plead as I did. And I want to thank especially Becca, you know, for getting my story out. And
good.
You all are wonderful. And I'm going to be around. I just have to be low-key. I'm not allowed to be out in public with this.
Well, let's talk in private maybe in the next couple of days. And you got my personal number, so let's make a point to have a discussion further about this.
Excellent. I will give you a call.
All right. Thanks, Albert. I'm going to move along. We've got a lot more callers to get to. So thank you, Albert Thomas. And, you know, once again, demonstrating the importance of ultimately ending prohibition. Okay, next caller up. Prefix is 269. First three numbers are 270. You are live on the air. Who am I talking to? 269, 270. Going once. Going twice. Okay. Up next, we have prefix 913. First three numbers of your phone number are 605. You're about to go live. And you are live on the air. Who am I talking to?
It's okay.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Who am I talking to?
Hi, it's Lisa Sublett. How are you?
Oh, Lisa Sublett. You know, I'm screenerless today, and so I'm flying blind. So I'm glad you called in. I'm having a bit of an awkward show, but it's all good. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. I saw that. I was just listening to the show going, oh, poor Joe. You're doing good, Joe. You're doing good.
Yeah, you know what? It's just a radio show. I don't really worry about it. But what happens is everybody calls me and texts me while I'm in the middle of a monologue and, you know, asking me questions about how to do stuff. And I'm like, how could I possibly – I'm pretty good at multitasking, but how could I possibly read what you're saying, answer what you're saying, and talk at the same time? I haven't figured that one out yet. So if you ever see me stammering like that, it's four people trying to talk to me right during the radio show. So what's happening out there in Kansas right now? I understand things have been pretty busy.
Well, you know, we're trying. I made some new connections today, and I was just fascinated when you were talking earlier. I have to learn more about this 501c3 being able to use for community service, because, you know, we're 501c3.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing more gratifying than when somebody comes to me and says, I got busted for pot. I got 100 community service hours. Can you satisfy them? And my answer is yes.
That's amazing. I had no clue. So I was totally fascinated by that whole part of the show. Of course, I always love listening to Mr. Cecil. But then also, today I made a connection with someone who started a 501c3 and had some grant writing connections, which is something that's been really desperate. Right.
I'm interested in that, too. Maybe we should have a further conversation after the show as well.
We always have something to talk about.
Yes, we do.
So that's been really good. You know, everybody's just kind of working on voter registration and things. And, you know, you were talking about that being in the front lines of this battle. There's no real rules. And it's ongoing. It's 24/7. It never lets up. You never know what angle it's going to come from. And I apologize for my dog.
That's all right. My dog's barking outside half the time during the show anyways.
And so it changes, like, all the time. And what people don't understand, and it's so funny, is that you'll have a few people in leadership. And so people see that work is getting done. We're working right now on we're just sending out a candidate survey to all the candidates and incumbents on medical cannabis. and then we're going to get that back and compile that into a voter guide before primary so people can find out who's issue friendly. But it's not, they're not yes or no answers. They actually have to respond with quotes that we'll be able to have. So people, it'll be in their own words. They can't say we misinterpreted anything. And so we'll have that voter guide. And so you always have things you're working on, you know, organizationally, everything. And you always have 200 projects that you could be doing at any given time, but there's not enough.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't
sing it to the choir here.
Right, exactly. That's exactly the point. It's like there is so much work to be done. And the thing I would say to people is don't be afraid. Well, I've never done this before. I don't know how to do that. Whatever, we will show you.
Yeah, we'll put you to work. You're perfect for the job. All you got to do is be willing. That's really, you know, don't come in with your own agenda. Leave your ego at home and just be willing to help, and you will be perfect for the job.
Right. I mean, did we plan on having 501c3s and running non-for-profits?
No, never.
No. So
I was just trying to get people to show up in court.
Right. So we didn't have a handbook either, but what's nice is we have experience, so we have a handbook now to give you. We can show you what to do. We had to figure it all out through school hard knocks, but we can actually teach you what to do now, what works and what's effective and what needs to be done, because I think people really need to understand that while it's nice we're accomplishing the voter guide and that we're getting that done and people are excited about that, there are got to be at least 20 other projects that in my mind are just as vital that should be being worked on. And each of those projects is a task that would require a dedicated person to do nothing but that task alone. And
exactly.
For every one thing you see us pushing forward on, you see 20 other projects that we know need to be done, but we only have so many hours in a day. Even the other people who step up with the volunteer only have so many hours in a day. And the cause is suffering. We could be so much further than what we are. The progress could be happening so much quicker than what it is. And that's the message that really I wanted to let people know. It doesn't matter if you're experienced. Are you willing? Because we can show you what to do. It doesn't matter how physically able you are, because there are things for keyboard warriors to do that are vitally important.
Oh, you know what? If you're willing to just care and either talk, type, or carry a sign somewhere, somehow, doing something, there's a place for you in this. And, you know, don't ever feel like, oh, I don't read or write good, or I don't speak well in public, or I don't this, I don't, who cares? There's something you do. If you could tie a knot, I guarantee you we'll find a knot that needs to be tied.
That's right. That's exactly right. And trying to get that message to everybody, we need every single person. Well, that doesn't work if you ain't got people. You got to have people.
Exactly.
It's
funny, when Jennifer Wynn comes on, she's got a very consistent message, and, you know, we need boots on the ground. We need people out there. We need your voice to be heard, and there's a lot of ways for that to happen. You know, it could be your phone call. It could be your letter. It could be your face. It could be your sign that you made and handed to somebody who could carry it. It could be, you know, it just goes on and on and on. There's so many ways, but we need your action. We need your actual presence in this, and that's what we need. You know, it all starts with your thought. It all starts with your intention. But and it doesn't have to be my group. It doesn't have to be your group. It doesn't matter. Start your own damn group. I'd rather not everybody keep starting their own groups, because there's so many little groups. But frankly, find a way, find a place. There is definitely a need.
Absolutely. And love is a verb. It's an action word.
Yes, it is.
It needs more
action. That's for damn sure.
Right. Yeah. That Elvis song. That should be our theme song. A little less talk and a little more action. Right. I think that's
our theme song. I love it.
Exactly. Because it's great when people hear Mr. Cecil's story and they're so outraged by it. You know.
Right.
Let's take it to that next step. Because we could be so much further down along this road if people took outrage to action. If they took outrage to action when they hear these stories, we would be that much closer to ending these stories. We would be.
Well, you know,
that
it's funny. I've always had this sort of mantra: how about now? And
mm-hmm.
you know, anytime something egregious happened, which isn't hard to find, I'll just put a little bit of a how about now. And you know, is this going to get you to go? Is this it? Is this the one that's going to work? You know, what is your inspiration? How do I find it? Let me find that button, and I will push it. And you know, let's figure out what inspires you to act. Think about that. Think about that, everybody who's listening. And if you're listening, think about telling somebody else that. What would it take you to get involved? Would it take you to get arrested? Would it take your loved one to get arrested? Would it take somebody you care about to have their kid taken away, lose their job, die from cancer because they couldn't get good medicine? What would it take? Or would it just take simply knowing that there's injustice happening across the land that you could help to right?
Exactly. My whole thing is, you know, when we started this, the very first sign I ever carried at our very first rally said, "What if it was your kid?" And, you know, that's how we're supposed to live anyway. That's how we're supposed
to
be. Well,
exactly.
Anyway.
Love your neighbor as yourself, right? Isn't that the great law?
Yes. I went off on a rant today, and I wrote a note on Facebook and put it up, you know, for all it's worth, because I just needed to rant. And I said, you know,
right.
I said, why did I delete the Stanford rape case post off my Facebook? And I
yeah.
said, because nothing will change.
Right.
How many cases of this do we see? And this is just one type of injustice, but how many injustices do we see? And I said, when our outrage lasts as long as our place in line at a drive-through, when the affliction of our social conscience is limited to comments we can make on a Facebook post, nothing will change. So I said, I deleted the post because I said, I don't want to keep seeing it because I know it won't matter. It won't change
exactly.
anything. You won't do anything about it. And so I just told the young people, I said, so I'm just telling you kids, you're on your own. We won't help you. We're caught in the revolving door. We're on the conveyor belt. We're plugged into the matrix. As long as we have the
yep.
right job, the right car, the right neighborhood, you know, we'll stay plugged in. So I told them, jump off the conveyor belt.
Yes.
You know, get to a place where you realize that all life is sacred and your life is sacred.
Well, and don't wait until it becomes your personal calamity, because
right.
eventually
all
it will.
Yes, it will. And, you know, I wish more people read that poem. The first, one of the big first rallies that I spoke at, it was filled with young people. And I started talking to them about the poet, and of course, here goes my Hashimoto's. I just had the name and there it went. The priest from the Holocaust, the Catholic priest who wrote the beautiful poem, First They Came for My Neighbor,
right.
because he was, right, these kids have not heard this poem. They're not teaching them this in school.
And then they
so
came for me,
them,
and there was no one.
Right, exactly, and there was no one left because I had not
yep.
stood for my neighbor. I'm like,
yep.
this is the stuff I'm talking about. That's why I went off of my rant. Kids, we're not going to teach you this. We won't teach you integrity and humility. We won't teach you that all, you know, your value. You're the only one that has ever been and ever will be. That's how special you are, and so is everyone around you. Is that special. We're not teaching people this, and so,
well, and you know what? I was talking about sort of the secret of the volunteering and the real blessing of groups like ours and yours, and it's that really affecting somebody, and you have those personal conversations with those people that you've really affected, and when you have somebody come and tell you in a heartfelt way that I was all alone. And then you picked up the phone and talked to me, and then I wasn't alone anymore. And
yeah.
then you held your hand out and said, I can help you. And then I wasn't stuck anymore. And when you taught me how to bring people to bear, and when I showed up and people were there with me, you know, and you see the powerful effect that what we know, our secret, you know, they have this, you know, whole sort of religion built around this secret. Well, it's the same secret, you know. It's doing good and loving. Just being loving is the most
wow.
powerful magic out there. It will do.
Yeah.
It will change the world, you know. And
that's how
and,
I ended my note. That's how I ended my note. I said, kids, if you can plug in a keyboard, then we have hope, because hope only rests in love. That's the only place
exactly.
hope can exist, is in love. And if and love is compassion, and it is action. It was never,
you cannot love without an action. It can't even happen. Just by the act of caring and loving, you are acting. And if you care and love, you will be moved to act, because that's just how it works. You know, if you sit by and don't act, that is the opposite of love. If there's somebody that's in need and you walk by them and don't do something, that's not love. That's something else. And I think that people need to realize that. You know, if you go around, wearing your tie-dye shirt and go, woo-woo, love and peace and love, and everything's great, and pass the joint, and then you watch and you see somebody who's suffering, and you walk past them, and you don't think about that, and you don't think, what can I do? You know, what can I do? Does that mean that you have to hand a $100 bill to everybody standing on the side of the freeway? Well, there's a lot of hucksters out there. But when you actually see somebody that is in need, that somebody who got raided, somebody who lost something significant because of this plant or some other reason, and you don't feel moved to do something, you know, please look in the mirror for a while. Look at those eyes, and hopefully you'll see maybe there's something needs to change.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Love is revolutionary. And you cannot have any, you know, that's just how it is. If you want change, it has to come from a loving place. And my mentor told me that way back in the day when this whole thing first started. And the first time I ever spoke to Steve, and he said, before you start this, you make sure that you're centered and all of your people are centered. And then through this whole process, you're going to have to take time to continue to get recentered now and then, because it's a marathon and it takes a huge toll. And we've
seen
that.
Well, remember this. The Earth is spinning at something like 15,000 miles a second or something. It's whether you, even if you're standing still, you're moving fast. So you do need to recenter, get your balance back again, and put your feet on the ground and connect yourself to your source. Otherwise, you get lost. You know, you're moving, whether you realize it or not. If you look at an electron microscope and you see that although you're sitting perfectly still and not moving, inside of you, all of your molecules are moving at light speed. Everything is constantly moving. How do you center? You have to connect, and you have to do that.
You
it's
do.
Important.
And that's what's so powerful about people stepping forward. The more people that step forward, more hands make lighter work, first of all. You don't wear out your frontline people. You know, and the more troops you have, you know, the less wear on everybody. But also, you find that strength and that reinvigoration and that power in each other. And that's what has to happen. You draw from each other, because all of us in this battle, I mean, we've been hit hard lately. We all have families. We all have other things going on, and some of it's very hard, very, very hard. And
some of us have just been riding the trail for a lot of years without a break. You know, it's you just think about that. You try running nonstop for 10 years or longer, and you know, think that your feet might not wear out. You know, but when you know that there's somebody that you can pass that baton to for a minute while you take a rest, and they're going to keep running, hey, you know, that's the hope. That's your teamwork.
Yeah.
That's what we bring to the table, is that teamwork that never has to stop, never has to rest, and always gets stronger.
True. Would that battle have been won if Joshua wasn't there to hold up Moses' arms? You've got to have some Joshuas who will come along and help do that. I mean, you've got to have some support. And so that's one thing I would say to people. Volunteers are so important, because the work is behind because we don't have enough people. But also, you know, are you still there, Joe?
Yeah, I'm here. That's just somebody else
I'm
calling
sorry.
My... No, you're fine. We're good. It's just another one.
My charger was.
No, we're good.
But you
this is the professionalism of my show.
You can't wear out your leadership, too. And I'm not talking just about myself or about you, but I've seen it happen to so many. I've seen so many people
it happens
come in with
to
all
most
that
people.
Passion. they come in with all that passion and they build great guns, and then they see the workload and they go, holy crap, pardon my French.
No, it's true. My vice president just went on sabbatical just now.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, great. You know, one more person who just, you know, has too much going on. I'm like, wow. You know, I mean, you know, you got to respect it. You know, you carried the load for a while, but geez Louise, you know, at the end of the day, some of us.
You watch people burn out and fade away, and you just want to yell at everybody, come on.
I know.
We can't keep burning out our good people because the workload is so intense that we've got to have people step up and help shoulder the load.
The thing, too, is it's important for people to realize that when somebody burns out that didn't want to burn out, they don't usually come back. It's not like they realize, oh, I need to take a rest for a little while and I'll be back. They usually go until they pop, and then they pop and I never see them again. It's just the way it is. It's good people trying, you know, as hard as they can, but eventually, you know, if you're given too much to carry, eventually you're going to collapse in a heap and you're not going to want to go back to that place. It's critical. You know, if you were ever thinking about this, and you know, we have our elections coming up in September, so I'm going to be beating this drum. You know, I'm going to be talking next week about the actual positions, what they entail. We're going to be bringing up candidates, people who are willing to run for offices, and bring them up to talk about themselves. Let people meet them and see. You know, I want this organization as it moves forward to not be drug on by the handful that are willing to drag it, but rather, you know, be an elite team chosen by the membership, you know, and willing and eager to do this job.
Yeah, because Joe, it's 24/7. It doesn't stop. If I didn't turn my phone off at night, I wouldn't sleep. That's just how it is. It's 24/7. It never stops because you can't. You get the call, you get that email, you get a text message, you get a message through the website, or a message on Facebook. Somebody contacts you. It's somebody else who needs help, needs information. And then you have the regular organizational stuff that goes on, and then you're always trying to progress the movement, like with us working on the bill and trying to get our bill through. And there's
always
so
emergencies that pop up. You know, with me, it's the cases. Somebody just got raided. We need to mobilize.
Yeah.
Somebody's got a court date coming up. They didn't bother telling us about it. Somebody, you know, it's just, you know, somebody's got a sentencing hearing coming up, you know, and it's like, where were they a month ago? Why didn't they give us fair warning? But they almost never do. We always have to react and respond. You know, we wear our little green ribbons with the Red Cross, and that Red Cross is it's a first responder's cross. You know, we run into the fire when everybody else is running away from it.
Right. You always have, I call it the tyranny of the urgent. So you have priorities, and you have what's important, and then you have to balance that with the tyranny of the urgent, of things like urgent matters that come up that have to be handled, and then you're sidetracked off of the other things. So the biggest thing I always tell people, I ran Bleeding Kansas from bed last year. I was in bed for a whole year. I had to have 4 kidney surgeries, and I didn't have insurance. So I stayed in bed until I could have insurance and get the surgeries I needed. The first video I ever did on YouTube, I did for my bed. And I still want patients to know I'm a patient too. I have autoimmune disease. And it's not what we can't do, it's what we can do. And like you said, even if you tie a knot, we'll find a place for that knot to go. You are so valuable and you're so important. I don't want people to hear this just pressure or browbeating, nobody's doing enough. It's because you are so important. You are so needed. You are so valued. You have stuff. Your unique perspective that only you can contribute, your unique talents that only you can contribute. And even if that's just, you can write letters to the editors, you can write letters to people who are locked up, you can do, there's ways that you have, there are things that you can do that may seem so meaningless to you, but they have ripples, just like that little pebble in the pond. They have ripples, and they can have huge effect. That's how important you are. So I don't want people to feel browbeaten. You know, I want you to feel empowered and uplifted. That's how important you are. You, who may not be valued, especially if you're chronically ill or you have however many felonies because of this prohibition or you have whatever, this society may not value you. They may tell you you don't have any worth or anything to contribute. But Joe and I are here to tell you, you have so much to contribute. You are so important, and you are desperately needed. So that's the message I want people. You bring those ripples that only you can bring. And, you know, what could happen if everybody threw their pebble in the pond? What kind of tidal wave could we create? So that's how important you are.
The sky is the limit, and you are absolutely right. And, you know, I love it when you come on the show because you bring you bring an inspiring message and you bring a point of view that is it's unique and it's accurate. You know, you have a similar perspective as I do, and you know, you rose your group up literally from your bedside, where, you know, I had to do it from a courthouse. They're both such different points of view, and yet you understand the not only the need but the value. And you know, I see a bright future. I see this year as the human solution has actually sort of taken a step back, shrunk down a little bit to be more effective, to be more concentrated, rather than just big and spread out. Being big for the sake of being big has much less value than being, you know, a tactical team that can respond. And I see more people this year stepping up. They haven't all necessarily taken action, but they've come to a place where they've, you know, said, you know what, I think I might. I think I'm ready. I think, you know, and that's where it all begins. And that's where, you know, we just need you to really take that to heart, to realize that what you bring to this organization, to this movement, we need. And I'm going to go ahead and move on from that. And I'm supposed to be shutting the show down in an hour, and I'm already 15 minutes over that. So I thank you for being here. I have a two-hour show to do, but because I was short on some guests and Lisa kicked in at the end. She got all the calls screened. She figured it out. Thank you so much, Lisa. You rock.
Yes.
But I got Tom Corby to come on, and he is not a man of brevity, and I need to give him time to talk. So thank you so much, Lisa Sublitz from Bleeding Kansas. You are amazing, and we appreciate you being here.
Well, blessings and much love to all.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. All right. We got Tom Corby coming up live. I'm going to snatch you from the screening. And, Tom, you are live on the air. Welcome to the show. Whoops, snatched me back. Tom, you are live on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, am I on?
You are on.
Oh, good. Listen, if my battery goes...
I just snatched you out of Lisa's arms there. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that, but it's time to bring you up.
All right, listen, if my phone goes dead, I told Lisa to bring me back in on Donna's phone. I've only got 1% on my charge.
Got it. If you drop off, I'll switch over to Donna.
Right, now listen, what I want to report and what Joe brings out, the Human Solutions goal and vision is to deschedule cannabis and end prohibition and free all our POWs. We're about court support and prisoner outreach program for the most part. And when we talk about court support, how important it is, especially when we hear trial, Alex Lyons, member of the Human Rights International, waived his rights to waive time. He's going on to pretrial conference tomorrow. That's at 8:30 a.m., number 1 Court Street right here in Oroville. And we always point out that at least bring local support. And 50-mile radius, if you could come, not only the former defendants and Alex, also to bear witness to the injustices that go on inside these courtrooms. They don't like the idea that we're there with our real representatives, but they can't take the Fifth Amendment right away. They take that ribbon away and a right to be in there, to keep an eye on them. It's a dog and pony show in there, and we always point out what a waste of time and taxpayers' money and disrupt my family. Like they like Nick Moran and Elizabeth Choi with Mama. They're staying here. Also, Nick Moran is going on the trial July. And out, if more people would not take these BS plea bargains like Joe didn't and would take them on to trial, we probably would have won our war against cannabis a long time ago. We always talk about court support also brings people together in unity. We meet New Point people, friends, and we cook for new dependents. So check out our calendar at thehumansolutioninternational.org. And if you have an event, anything to do with human rights, civil rights, the Human Solution, you can post it on our calendar. We'd be glad to help you. Barry Donnelly, myself, post on the calendar. We can help us support for you. So come help me the solution to end prohibition. No one should be jailed for a plant. Then when we know that there's 100 plus in for life without parole, this is unacceptable. And so important to write a POW to let them know they're not forgotten. Jail call is the most important type of call. Also, we have our letter writing campaigns on premises and parks, and these letters are very important. I want to thank Coffee Party Radio, Bobby Rodrigo, and Joe, and all the people on the front lines coming together in unity. Together we stand. And don't forget to breathe. Thank you, Joe. If there's nothing else, I'll
all right. Thank
now.
You so much, Tom Corby. And as always, I want to thank everybody, including the Coffee Party Radio Network, for giving us an opportunity to have this show. Next week, I think we've got some special guests, some former prisoners, and I think we're going to have a couple of weeks of some incredible guests coming up. So just want to thank everybody for making A Cup of Joe a great show, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for helping.
Hi, I'm Willie Nelson, and the Willie Nelson Teapot Party and I endorse the Human Solution, supporting cannabis prisoners because no one should go to jail for a plant.
Little things I should have said, Don. You were always.